Exodus 22. Just for the recording's sake, tonight we're in Exodus 22, continuing on in some of the regulations that the Lord has put forward for the children of Israel as they are in the area of Mount Sinai, having received the Ten Commandments, which are delineated in Exodus 20. And I'd like to share screen, if possible.
Yeah, I'll get to you in a
second. Okay, great. So let's turn to Exodus 22 and just read some of the verses here. I have the New King James. So chapter 22, Exodus, verse 1. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep stolen. Verse 2, if the thief is found breaking in and he is struck so that he dies, there shall be no guilt for his bloodshed. If the sun has risen on him, there shall be guilt for his bloodshed. He should make full restitution. If he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. If the theft is certainly found alive in his hand, or whether it is an ox or a donkey or sheep, he shall restore double. If a man causes a field or a vineyard to be grazed and lets loose his animal and it feeds in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. If a fire breaks out and catches in thorns so that stacked grain, standing grain, or the field is consumed, he who kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. Verse 7, if a man delivers to his neighbor money or articles to keep, and it is stolen out of the man's house, if the thief is found, he shall pay double. If the thief is not found, then the master of the house shall be brought to the judges to see whether he has put his hand into his neighbor's goods. Verse 9, for any kind of trespass, whether it concerns an ox, a donkey, a sheep, or clothing, or for any kind of lost thing which another claims to be his, the cause of both parties shall come before the judges, and whomever the judges condemn shall pay double to his neighbor. Verse 10, if a man delivers to his neighbor a donkey, an ox, a sheep, or any animal to keep, and it dies, is hurt, or driven away, no one seeing it, then an oath of the Lord shall be between them both, that he has not put his hand into his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept that, and he shall not make it stolen. But if in fact it is stolen from him, he shall make restitution to the owner of it. If it is torn to pieces by a beast, then he shall bring it as evidence, and he shall not make good what was torn. Two more verses here. If a man borrows anything from his neighbor and it becomes injured or dies, the owner of it, not being with it, he shall surely make it good. If its owner was with it, he shall not make it good. If it was hired, it came for its hire. So today we're looking at some expansion here in these regulations, but first let's look to a word of prayer. Our Father, we once again just come before you. We ask for your guidance tonight. We are impressed by the care and the concern that you have for the children of Israel, not just leading them out of Egypt, delivering from the furnace of bondage, but also making a way for them, making good on your promise to return them along with Moses to Mount Sinai, and then delivering specific and intensive instructions for them in how to live as they prepare to enter into the land of Canaan at some point in the future. And we just thank you and praise you for this display, really, of your loving kindness. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Tonight we're focusing on commandment number 8. Exodus 20 verse 15 says, you shall not steal. And then, of course, commandment 9, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. And so we're looking at these two commandments as we round out the 10 commandments. Neil, are you ready to share screen?
Yep, you should have it.
Okay, great. And let me just start the slideshow. Once again, we see the picture here of the children of Israel wandering through the wilderness, a massive group of people. Lord, was it not you who dried up the sea, the waters of the great deep, who made the depths of the sea a pathway for the redeemed to cross over? We're talking about Mount Sinai, right at the bottom there. That's where we are right now, close to the Red Sea, or relatively close, between the Gulf of Suez and the Gulf of Aqaba. This is the type of territory that they are in. This is all a rehash. And again, in the Pentateuch as a whole, there are six major themes, and today we're focusing again on God's revelation of himself in covenant, law, and tabernacling presence at Sinai. Here are the Ten Commandments. Here we talked about Commandment 8 and 9. Next week, we'll look at Commandment 10 and also Commandment 4, thou shalt keep the Sabbath day holy. Once again, we are talking about thou shalt not steal, the 8th commandment and the 9th commandment. Also dipping in a little bit to Commandment 10, shall not covet your neighbor's house, etc. There are three basic lessons which are encompassed in these Exodus chapters, chapter 21 through 23, these ordinances, which have tremendous relevance to our lives. Those three lessons are, number one, a concern for fairness and justice. We spoke about this last time. A compassion for the poor and oppressed. And three, a consecration of self and resources. People talk a lot about the environment, talking about animal rights and such. All of that is in the law. Honestly, all of it, the Lord cares for his creation. He's provided for, he sustains it, and asks us to be good stewards, really. So the Lord has thought of everything and has written these things down for us. So the idea is, what would a reasonable person expect for restitution? And that's really the standard today in our society, too. I think about the standards for a realtor or just property owners in general. A court will always ask the question, what would a reasonable person have done? And so effectively here, this kind of weaves its way through all of these ordinances. In chapter 21, we dealt with culpable damage, damage that was caused through someone's lack of responsible actions. Number one, by leaving, say, a hole dug uncovered and thus causing harm to another. This is just negligence, the failure to do something that was reasonable. Or in an animal fight, another one's animal is injured. You could have prevented that. In fact, damage was caused, and there's a way to alleviate this damage in the law. Let's see here. What am I doing? Oh, I guess that's the last slide. I had thought I had one more, but anyway, let's turn to deeper examination here. So in verses 1 through 4 of chapter 22, we pick up with a third example of property damage here, which also illustrates the morality of the eighth commandment, as we mentioned. It contains a group of five cases, like many of the other paragraphs in the covenant code. In cases of theft, the penalty is much greater than those of negligence because it involves another person's property. A man is directly guilty and stands to benefit from his theft, and so the penalty increases. The reason for the fivefold penalty, or the penalty five times paid back for what happened in the case of stealing an ox, is probably because one man stole the means of another person's livelihood. The principle would extend to taking any of a man's plowing or cultivating tools, anything that would harm someone economically. Breaking and entering, verses 2 and 3, a home in the night could expose the intruder to the loss of his life, justifiable homicide. We have that same regulation today. Someone breaks in your home and you shoot him. The law says you're justified because you are in immediate peril. In this particular case, you have justifiable homicide at night, in which case the householder would not be held responsible. But during the day, such an invasion during the daylight hours would be a different situation, since there would be witnesses, and the scope of the intruder's intentions, whether just to steal or to kill, could be assessed. So someone breaks in your home, even today, there are standards of care that you have to observe and such. You know, not every case is justifiable, certainly. When goods have been stolen or consumed, and the thief has nothing with which to repay his crime, then he must be sold into servitude. And this presumes until he's paid the debt. But if the stolen goods are still in his possession, then there is a hope of repentance and voluntary restitution. At least the original owner can be reunited with his own animal, and the penalty would be that the thief must provide a similar animal for restitution. When the thief voluntarily confessed, this is said in Leviticus 6, verses 4 and 5, it would be required that he would add only one-fifth to the theft. So we can see this the standard of fairness being applied even in the case of outright sins here against your brother, Israelite brother. In verses 5 and 6, a fourth type of property damage is involved here. Number one, the letting of livestock graze in another person's field. And number two, letting a fire get out of control so that it burns over a neighbor's field. Of course, our friend Samson didn't observe this rule when he tied two foxes' tails together with torches and let them run through a Philistine field. But that's a but I digress on that, certainly. The identical situation appears only in reverse order in some of the Canaanite laws, actually, that were present in the land. And what's interesting, if you read some of the commentators here, that when they went into the land of the Canaanites, and of course, there were other nations there too, they had laws that somewhat mimicked the Israelite laws, only there were many detestable practices that they practiced. And of course, the Lord wanted to separate his people, but it wasn't that they were completely lawless. I mentioned this book before. Derek Kidner wrote a book on the Proverbs, and he made the same point. Solomon was the wisest man on earth, but there were other wise men too that could make observations about humans and human conditions and such. So they didn't go into a particularly extreme, or I should say, a land that was without rules. It was just that the Lord instituted his own, certainly. So thus men are held responsible not only for the harm they do, but also for the harm they cause, even though they may not have purposely designed the damage that ensued. Very much the same today. Negligence, certainly. The restitution will be the top yield that field has ever produced, if the whole field was ruined, or if not, the choicest sections left will be the standard for the whole field. So, regulations here, pretty fair. Let's look at verses 7 through 15. The last section on property damage treats four classes of goods entrusted to others for their custody or use. So, where somebody becomes a surety, let's say, or I should say, a custodian or a bailiff. The first case involved leaving valuable articles, verses 7 through 9, or stuff for safekeeping. And of course, then it happens only to discover that a thief stealing them. The thief is to make a double restitution, verse 4, as to what was stolen. The same situation appears in verses 8 and 9. Only here the identity of the thief is not known, and thus there is a suspicion that the keeper may have embezzled those securities. The bailiff here, or the bailee, must appear before the judges where a deposition of innocence is taken as an oath before God in court. In verse 8 is the general rule, and verse 9 specifies charges of misappropriation or breach of trust. Pretty much, again, laws that people can get along and that there'd be a finality in settling these cases here. And the assumption is not so much that people won't sin, but when they do sin, what are the consequences for it? Here's a second case, verses 10 through 11. This one deals with animals entrusted to another that were mutilated in the pasture or injured themselves or were driven off by robbers. The same oath in court was required since there were no witnesses and only God could finally decide the keeper's culpability. There is a third case, once again, here we're looking at goods entrusted to other people. Third case here, verses 12 and 13. Here the animal is given for safekeeping, and that animal given for safekeeping was stolen. Since the keeper or bailee was negligent in guarding the animal, he must make restitution by giving the owner an animal for the one stolen. Pretty fair. But if the animal given for safekeeping was torn to pieces by wild animals, he would only need to produce the evidence of this fact and no payment was required. And then we have a fourth case here of goods put in the possession of someone else. This is verses 14 and 15. Here the problem is of a hired beast being injured or dying while the owner was not present. Here, since neglect is assumed, a full replacement is required. However, if the owner was present, the wages agreed on were regarded as sufficient to offset the hazard run by the owner in renting out his property. And his first-hand witness to the deed would take away all suspicion of negligence here. So, four classes of cases of goods put in the possession of someone else. Now we deal with some thornier problems here. This is verses 16 through 31. Some bizarre situations. Let's read verses 16 through 31 together here. And again, I've got the New King James here. If a man entices a virgin who is not betrothed and lies with her, he shall surely pay the bride price for her to be his wife. If her father utterly refuses to give her to him, he shall pay money according to the bride price of virgins. You shall not permit a sorceress to live, verse 18. Verse 19, whoever lies with an animal shall surely be put to death. Verse 20, he who sacrifices to any god except to the Lord only, he shall be utterly destroyed. Verse 21, you shall neither mistreat a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. 22, you shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you afflict them in any way, and they cry out at all to me, I will surely hear their cry. Verse 24, and my wrath will become hot, and I will kill you with a sword. Your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless. 25, if you lend money to any of my people, the key is my people here. If you lend to any of my people who are poor among you, you shall not be like a money lender to him. You shall not charge him interest. If you ever take your neighbor's garment as a pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down. Verse 27, for that is his only covering. It is his garment for his skin. What will he sleep in? And it will be that when he cries to me, I will hear him, for I am gracious. A couple more verses here. Verse 28, you shall not revile God nor curse a ruler of your people. 29, you shall not delay to offer the first of your ripe produce and your juices. The firstborn of your sons shall be given to me. Verse 30, likewise, you shall do with your oxen and your sheep. It shall be with its mother 7 days, and on the eighth day you shall give it to me. 31, end of the chapter here, and you shall be a holy, it shall be holy men to me. You shall not eat meat torn by beasts in the field. You shall throw it to the dogs. So verses 16 and 17 here. The law on the seduction of a maiden not yet engaged is different from that dealing with the seduction of a betrothed girl. Deuteronomy 22 kind of gives us a little bit more information where violence was also involved. The penalty here is that the seducer must pay the bride price and agree to marry her. If this offer is rejected by the girl's father, the man must still pay the bride price. Here's a commentator remarking that this payment and offer did not clear the guilt of sin committed here, for cleansing was needed by repentance. Verse 18, pretty straightforward. Practice sorcery, you're going to be put to death. 19, pretty reprehensible here. This was widely practiced among the Canaanites. And enough said here. Verse 20, all who sacrifice to any god other than Yahweh will be dedicated for destruction. This is repeated again in Deuteronomy 17. And then finally, verses 21 through 27, these verses treat various forms of oppression against the poor, the widow, the orphan, and the alien. Since these people had few or no natural protectors in society, they were to be shielded in their vulnerable estate. And it's interesting, there are two shifts in these verses here. A shift to the first person, which placed God himself as the special protector and advocate of these underprivileged people. Jesus repeats this same thing in the Gospels, doesn't he? The angels of God are always Angels, I should say, angels assigned to children are always looking in the face of God. This is something that's very precious to the Lord. And then the second thing is a sojourner, a resident alien, and widows and orphans were to be protected also, specifically protected. And this is said numerous times in the scriptures, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Jeremiah, Zechariah, Malachi. These are things, indictments that the Lord made against Israel for not doing these things. There are many other verses in the wisdom books also on these, but it was the prophets who really came after Israel for their neglect in these areas of oppressing the poor and the weak. In Genesis 31, it says, "The cry of the weak will come directly up to God." So, special class here. Let's look at verses 25 through 27. Here are the laws dealing with interest on loaned money. These are dealt also in Leviticus 25 and Deuteronomy 15. The issue here is the kind of a negative stance on charging of interest toward Israelites, one Israelite to another. It says, in fact, the righteous man may be defined as one who lends his money without interest, Psalm 15, verse 5, and does not lend at usury or excessive interest. We have usury laws on credit cards, limits on how much interest can be charged on those. But in this particular case here, there was a limit. Always, with respect to these regulations, there's always a limit that is placed here. On the other hand, in Deuteronomy, it declares you may charge a foreigner interest, but not a brother Israelite. So this law is not dealing with maybe our more modern sense of usury or excessive interest, but interest of any kind to a fellow Israelite. The main problem was that charging interest to one's brother was a way of avoiding responsibility to the poor and to one's fellow man by turning it into a money-making enterprise. Again, the Lord just anticipating these things that are going to come up when Israelite lived with Israelite. Another thing that is addressed here is the retaining of one's garment as temporary collateral overnight. This was strictly forbidden for the Israelite. Even for an interest-free loan, if there was an interest-free loan and there was a type of security or pledge that was given, even in that circumstance, you had to return the garment at night. Why was this cloak or poncho or whatever garment it was, served as a blanket at night? And when evening came, it got cold, certainly. This cold would be problematic or vexing. And so the Lord put this special provision in there. Another thing that the Israel prophets upbraid Israel for, with respect to not doing this to their fellow brother. Rounding out the chapter here, verse 28, any word or deed that detracts from the glory of God is a reviling or such as reviling or cursing his name is forbidden. And then similarly, care must be taken not to curse any who are in authority. This is what Paul was slapped across the face for doing when he cursed the high priest, calling him a whitewashed sepulcher. And he quotes, he understands this rule and then, of course, apologizes for doing it. So can't curse an authority figure and then, or for cursing God alone or the king. Finally, verses 29 and 30, the law of the first fruits required that the following first fruits be offered to God, the fullness of your harvest and its outflow, and also the of your presses, the juices, the firstborn of their children and the firstborn of the cattle. Here, the children were to be redeemed by a money payment or the substituted service of one Levite for each firstborn. Numbers chapter 3 says this. So they were not to hold back or delay to do these things, even though the text here seems to be anticipate that men would be naturally reluctant to do this. They weren't to hold back here. And there is one commentator writes this. Notice the theological significance of this request. In the previous discussion in Exodus 4, on the 7 days that the first young firstborn that the young firstborn were allowed to stay with their mother, the point here was that it was to give kind of natural relief to the woman and the child by giving it that special time of suckling its offspring here. So with respect to this time with children, there was always a fairness and a natural explanation for it. Finally, verse 31 here to end the chapter. Underlying all these instructions on these societal relations was a call to service. You are to be my holy people. This was the noble calling as Yahweh's firstborn son or his treasured possession, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. This demanded noble living among Israelites. If they kept that in mind, then their living should exemplify that. Animals killed by another were unclean for two reasons. This is the final verse. The beasts that would tear the animal were unclean themselves, and the blood of such a slain animal would remain in its tissues, leaving it unclean. And so those that roadkill or that dead meat was to not to be eaten, but to be given to the dogs then. So kind of a collection of different regulations here put forward for the nation of Israel. Any thoughts or questions? I know we went through this. Sometimes it seems like there's sometimes not a logical flow, but certainly would welcome any suggestions or claim or questions on these.
Ray, this is Neil.
Yeah.
So would the would someone put into place something for a neighbor to hold on to? What kind of examples would that be in the society that we're talking about? Because I find it difficult to kind of come up with examples of what that would be. Would it be cattle? Would it be produce or grain? Or I don't know. What would it be that someone would have to entrust in someone's care for a certain amount of time that, and then it gets possibly stolen where this would be an issue, I guess.
Yeah, so for instance, of course, the Israelites were expected to appear before the Lord three times in the year, and that involved a journey. So certainly if they were to journey, and obviously the family would have to appear in Jerusalem, let's say. And of course they would have, hopefully they were blessed and had servants and such, and there were valuables and such. I can't imagine them carrying all their possessions. I mean, let me give you an example. I was going through this portion in my private reading this morning about, I'm quite a bit ahead in Exodus, and just the amount of gold that was used to construct the tabernacle use, amounted to, in total there was about 10 tons worth of metal in that tabernacle, and they gave of their abundance. So they had a lot of precious stuff. And so, I could see them, leaving on that journey and entrusting it maybe to someone that stayed behind, or a trusted servant or somebody. Perhaps maybe that was the case. Or maybe they left on a journey of some kind and entrusted it to someone. And of course, it could be a temptation for someone, a lot of these valuables. That could be an example. I could imagine.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like it going on a journey, where you just have to, you just wouldn't leave it in the house or whatever. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, Chris, even the parable of the talents, the last guy who gets a talent and buries it in the ground.
Sure.
I mean, tried to rip it off, basically, and expect the Lord to come back. And, it's kind of, I don't know, maybe it's a talent that they have of, yeah, being clever. I don't know. Kind of funny, but Great question. Well, with that being said, if there aren't any other comments or questions, we can end tonight. We'll pick up on Exodus 23 next time, and then we'll do 24, and then we'll go on.
Ray,
Sorry.
I
Yes.
did want another comment.
Sure. Yes, of course. Yes.
I was selected for jury duty on Monday
Oh.
and Tuesday, and I didn't get selected for a jury, but the judge was kept really reinforcing that this person is innocent until proven guilty. And the judge kept repeating it, kept going into detail, kept saying it, said it so much, you kind of felt embarrassed at some point. And so the verse that I was just looking at was, you shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. So it just seems so obvious, doesn't it? That, well, who's going to do that? And you kind of just feel like the things that are said here, on the surface, they're obvious, but they need to be said and they need to be emphasized because, we're sinners. And we're trying to scratch for everything we can get, and we're, looking out for number one. And that these type of rules kind of show that, that these need to be emphasized and re-emphasized, and even the obvious thing like, don't afflict a widow. Why? It almost seems like, why would you even need to say that? But unfortunately, we do. Like, even in this day and age, there's, at the bank that I work at, there's this emphasis to watch out for elderly, very elderly people that are being taken advantage of, and their money's just stolen from them. Because they're just kind of vulnerable. So I think these are things that when we read and they have to be emphasized with us because it seems like, well, I would never do that, but it's great that they're emphasized here.
Yes, and that's of course the basis of the law, isn't it? I remember somebody mentioning this, we all, not we, I'll just say a person may tend to think that there's depravity, certainly the sin nature is depraved, but there's really pockets of goodness within us, just naturally, and
Right.
the law disabuses you of that. This is And a lot of times, when you're reading through it, you think, this would never even have entered into my mind. But the law provokes the flesh, and we are corrupt. And I think it was best said by Bill McDonald when he did our mini conference, if you think about something long enough, you'll do it. And he was in his 80s when he said that. A very wise and sage man. Yep. Any other thoughts? I can then turn it over to Fred then.
Well, Ray, thank you for preparing this.
Mm-hmm.